Yeah, because then if we don't acknowledge it, we do our lists, then we'll get people yelling at their phones. Why aren't they? Why does nobody pick Miles? And then we're right. like, we know what's going on.
All right. Okay. All right. Annoy the listener. I see what you're doing.
You're engaging in a semi-negative manner.
It's like we're preemptively trolling.
Yeah. That's how you keep them coming back. Welcome back to The List, a Write Fiction podcast. We got a great, exciting show for you today. And so what can you say about jazz, America's only true art form? Starting in New Orleans, jazz has been around in its common recognizable form for over 100 years now, and has given us some of the greatest musical minds and artists in that time. From early innovators such as Buddy Bolden, Sidney Bechet, and Louis Armstrong, to the vast musical minds like Duke Ellington and Fletcher Henderson, to the singular talents like Charlie Parker and Thelonious Monk. Going to fusion folks like Herbie Hancock and John McLaughlin, to modern day greats like Wynton Marsalis, John Batiste, and Kamasi Washington. Jazz has been at the forefront of pushing musical boundaries and, of course, capturing that exploration in the album format. With such a long history to draw from, it seems impossible to narrow it down to our top three favorite jazz albums. But that is the challenge we have today as we discuss our own personal top three favorite jazz albums. This one was so tough, it even gave me a little stomach ache trying to narrow it down to my top three. I know the other guys feel the same way. We should make this a very exciting show for you today as we discuss our personal top three favorite jazz albums. And with that, I'll introduce the guys. We have Freddie Berman.
Hello.
We have Brendan McGeehan.
Hey.
And we have Adam Zielinski.
Hello.
And so for this week, we are going to go to Mr. Brendan McGeehan first to discuss his personal top three favorite jazz albums.
Oh, man. Okay. I'll lead off. Thank you, Aaron. I will second that emotion with the stomach ache. There was like some kind of just burden. I felt like I had to get my list right for this one because it's just, it's a vast topic. And I will say the vastness of the topic, I was wrestling with who to pick, and I did end up going with three of the giants, in my opinion. Just that's kind of how I felt I needed to go. And I was thinking of like trying to cover all the different eras and different styles and subgenres of jazz, and it can't be done. Anyway, enough of a disclaimer. My picks are in no particular order because I couldn't possibly rank these. But my first pick that I'm going to talk about anyway is Duke Ellington, and the album is Indigos. And something about this album is just, well, everything about this album is perfect to me. It's got amazing sequencing. The dynamic through the whole album is varied and beautiful. The textures are amazing. It is, to me, one of the best examples of a jazz orchestra. And it's got a combination of instrumental and lyric tunes. There's like, just when you thought you've heard every version of Autumn Leaves that you ever needed to hear, hear the version on Ellington Indigos. It's one of my favorites. The vocal and violin are the leading voices of the tune. I just love it. And just to briefly kind of talk about how I got this album, because it's hard to find online. I have my copy on vinyl. And I got a call like 10 years ago from a friend of mine. And do you have those friends who like don't care about music? Like they exist. And I have one of those friends, like really just doesn't care about music either way. But he was renting this house and the landlord was going through the attic and was getting rid of all this stuff that was in the attic. And there were boxes and boxes of records. So my friend calls me and is like, hey, my landlord's getting rid of all these albums. I know you like that stuff. Do you want to come and take a look before they go to be donated or go to the trash or whatever? So I rushed down there. This was like a 3-hour drive. And wow. I went through everything. And I just took as much as really I could fit in my car. And the landlord was cool with it. And I didn't even really get to check out what I was getting. But in going through it when I got home, I found this one. And it was a cardboard sleeve that had been fashioned later, because the, I guess the original was lost, and all it had a Sharpie on it. Just said Ellington Indigos. So I was like, all right, let me listen to this. And I put it on. And from the first second, it was just so enthralling. So like, I just wanted to share that because it has special, like kind of mysterious significance to me. I'm going to go to my next pick. And my next pick is Mingus, the Black Saint and the Sinner Lady. And again, just a beautiful example of a record and just such a complete musical thought. It's like, I think this is like the top of Mingus's game, honestly, compositionally. It's got something for everybody. It really like goes through so many different lanes and weaves through some just amazing composition and some amazing playing. And I really love it. And I remember, again, just a little personal anecdote with this record. I remember doing a gig with some sax player years ago, and we were talking about Mingus, and he was like, all right, cool. So you know Mingus, but do you know the Black Saint and the Sinner Lady? And I was like, no. He's like, well, then do you really know Mingus? And so I immediately listened to it, and yes, I couldn't agree more. And it's pretty cool. The liner notes have a full note by Mingus's psychologist, which was also an interesting touch. It gives you a little bit of a insight into the man. And so my last pick is Charlie Parker with Strings. And again, I can't think of a more gorgeous album. I think it's amazing. Just the blending of saxophone and strings, rhythm section. It's just some of the most gorgeous music I've ever heard, period. So those are my three. Thanks, guys.
Great picks. Great picks.
Yeah, man.
You know what? I'm going to go next and give my three picks here. This was very hard, very, very hard. And I guess we'll talk about this a little bit later. So my number three pick is an album by Antonio Carlos Jobim called Stone Flower, released July 7th, 1970. And this album is so rich rhythmically and I guess harmonically. I'm learning, that's like a word people use. I came to this album because there was this band called The Daily Supplement who played the song Brazil at Chuck's Harvest Farm Festival. And they played this song and I was blown away, and I thought they wrote it. I was like, how'd you guys write this thing? And they were like, no. It's an Antonio Carlos Jobim song. And so that's what led me to the album. And it's been one of my favorites for the longest time. I love this one deeply. And so I'll go to my next pick, which is my number two pick, let's say, is an album from 1958, released January 1958. And it's an album called Blue Train by Philadelphia's own John Coltrane. I don't know how I came to find this album, but specifically, I love all the songs on this record, but specifically the song Moment's Notice. I just put this on maybe like once a day, and like I sing the entire song, like all the solos, everything. I know like this song inside and out. And so I had to put this in for that specific reason. Well, the other songs are great, but I just listen to it so much, I can't like leave it out. And then my number one favorite jazz album of all time was released in February of 1959. And it's by one of my favorite artists of all time, Nina Simone. And the album's called Little Girl Blue. And this is her first album, actually. And it has so many, the song choices on the record are just like amazing. Now, wait, let me start again. Philadelphia's own Nina Simone. I Love You Porgies on there. My Baby Just Cares For Me, Little Girl Blue, which is like probably one of the first things I learned trying to play on piano when I was like three. Don't Smoke in Bed. I mean, this album is just like tremendous. So those are my top three favorite jazz albums of all time. Today. And those are my picks, guys. And now we're going to go to Mr. Adam Z.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Top three jazz, huh? I mean, what a, you know, for such a considerably considered narrow genre, it's really a lot of good output in there. You know, as everyone said, it wasn't easy, but I had to go with nostalgia on a lot of this. So without further ado, my number three is Oscar Peterson's Night Child. Now, this one has a little history. Me and my old buddy Andy used to spin this on vinyl with a guitar player I would jam with back in Honesdale, you know, 22 years ago or whatever. And he'd always play this album. I love that Oscar Peterson's on the roads almost exclusively on the first half, and it's just got this really calming feel to it. And Joe Pass's guitar in this is fantastic. And it's just, I mean, Oscar Peterson is, I mean, my wife's a big fan. It's great dinner music, you know, and well, Night Child, it's good evening music, this particular one, but Oscar in general, just a, what a talent. You know, Canada just has so many.
Good sexy time music? Is that what you said?
That's not this podcast. Well, that'll be for the future. But I have two young kids, so I'm not sure what you're talking about. But
happened so at least no twice. More sexy two time.
never do you know. You don't want to rule anything out. But now you gotta have Oscar Peterson in there somewhere. One of the many Canadian treasures in the music world. At number two, this one, this album particularly isn't all that jazzy per se, but he's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, jazz guitarist, and Grant Green Alive. This is recorded in 70 in North Jersey, and just, man, it just rips. It just, Grant Green just, he can make so many ideas out of like the same four notes. He's one of the more brilliant tacticians doing a lot with very little. And I mean, Grant Green very much shaped my guitar playing in the modern day, and he continues to. So there's Grant Green Alive, number two. And the number one, and I have a feeling he's going to win the day, is John Coltrane, and I went with Africa Brass, or Africa, however you want to put it. Just another phrasing I use a lot is when an instrument is like beyond the note it is, and there's a spirituality to it. We were talking about that with guitars before, but with Coltrane, it's just like there's just more to it than just a note, and there's so much of his being into it. And Africa is just this, just this really deep guttural thing. Got two bass players on there, and also a side note, Olay, the one that came after this, is almost the same session guys, and you know. How do you mess with Elvin Jones and McCoy Tyner? You don't. And my little factoid about this one is David Crosby cites Africa as his inspiration for 8 Miles High with the Birds. And those are my three.
That is very weird.
Wow.
Very weird. Good connection there. Connecting David Crosby to Coltrane. That's what you come here for, folks.
Jump on the Coltrane.
Man, similarly, did you ever hear Steve Reich talk about Africa Brass?
Nah.
I think it was the inspiration for music for 12 musicians, too. Another strange influence.
Interesting.
There was something something in the water in the early 60s jazz scene and all those rockers.
Yeah, yeah. And so with that, thanks, Adam. And we're going to go to Mr. Freddie Berman.
Hey, hey, hey.
Did you see what I did there with my little Oprah voice?
Yeah, that was good.
Freddie Berman.
Come on down. Wow. Yeah, this was a tough one. You know, the toughest part, I think, was to narrow it down to three. It was really tough. So without further ado, all right. My number one, and it's really not number one, two, three in terms of best, which one out of the three, these are just three that came to mind. All right. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Art Blakey, Moan It, which essentially is a Philadelphia record. Every single player, except for Blakey, who's from Pittsburgh, on that record is a Philadelphian. Lee Morgan, Benny Golson, Bobby Timmons, and Jimmy Murray, the late great Jimmy Merritt. Art Blakey is perhaps my favorite jazz drummer, quote unquote jazz, just because of his drive. And the song Moanin' itself, it just gets me every time. Basically, Blakey does not do one fill. I think maybe he does a roll in between somebody's solos. And then there's another part of the record that kills me, of the song, is when, I forget which solo, the end of Lee Morgan's solo, Benny Golson basically picks up his solo with the last three notes of Lee Morgan's solo. And I think it was something that they planned, because I've listened to alternate takes and they do the same thing, but it's still pretty cool. Pretty cool. All right, moving on. The next record I'm going to put on my list would be Out There by Eric Dolphy, which the way I got turned on to Dolphy was through a neighbor of mine who was a younger guy. Him and his wife and small child moved in to the house next door to my parents' house when I was a kid. And unbeknownst to me, this guy was a huge music fan. And I guess, I don't know, maybe I was around 14, 15. I would go down, I would do side work for him. He had a window blind company, and he was doing repairs out of his garage. And I would go down to his basement and see all these records. And after work sometimes, he would just play me some records. And he knew that I played drums. And then one day he put on this Eric Dolphy record, and I was blown away. I was like, wow. You know, not that I was an expert on what jazz is supposed to sound like, but bass clarinet, what? You know what I mean? It just took my head off. It was amazing. And the fact that there's Ron Carter playing cello on it was pretty different as well, you know? So that would be my number two. Like I said, they're in no particular order. And the third record on my list is, again, with John Coltrane's Giant Steps. Now, that is not the classic quartet, but it still carries a lot of weight for me, because actually the first time I heard Coltrane play was the song Giant Steps, and it was on a Greatest Hits, an Atlantic Records Greatest Hits compilation, which contained many of the songs on this record. So, you know, it's just classic compositionally. Giant Steps, Cousin Mary, Naima, Mr. PC. I mean, all the songs are just great, great song. And it was kind of like the beginning of his experimentation with the sheets of sound concept.
Nice.
So there you have my three sons, as it were, my three records.
Those were excellent picks, Freddie. Excellent.
Everybody's.
That's great.
And actually, so you got all our picks, and we're going to take a short break and be back shortly with a discussion. Hold on. And we are back. And we're going to have a little discussion about our picks. As you know, I was mentioning, other guys were mentioning earlier, this was extremely hard for us to narrow down our picks to the top three. Actually, what one side thing that we've did on this time that we haven't done before is we actually polled each other. for our picks to find out as a group which one were the top three picks. And so I'm actually going to give that to you right now. So the top three picks out of the four of us were Giant Steps, Africa Brass, and Charlie Parker with Strings. And so that was the top three picks. And I will say this, those top three picks each only had two. So they were all equal. There wasn't one where it had more than two of us voting for it. So those were the top three that we chose as a group. So what that says to me is that it was really spread out. Our voting was pretty spread out. I personally thought that Charlie Parker with Strings would get like all the votes, but I was wrong.
So it was like a three-way tie, in other
three-way
words?
Three-way tie.
Yeah. Wow.
Three-way tie.
Interesting. Interesting.
I mean, nobody voted for their own picks.
Right.
No,
that was the rule.
The rule. Yeah.
Right. But I thought, for some reason in my mind, and I guess this is part of the perception of jazz and the recordings of jazz, and there's a lot of jazz out there in the world, is that I thought automatically it would be Charlie Parker with Strings. Huh. But that's just like shows, I guess, the vastness of, you know, the amount of albums out there, the different albums we chose, the styles that were chosen, and also our own personal inclinations to those albums. And that was very, very surprising to me personally. What do you guys think?
Well, besides He Who Has Yet to Be Named, they're like, with jazz, there's never like a large consensus, really. Because there's just, I mean, every decade is kind of like a different kind of, you know, at least for a while, a different iteration. I mean, I don't know where the jazz world really stands today, but you know, you went from like the swing and then bebop and then post bop and then fusion. I mean, it's hard to like say which one's the best, because they all kind of have their own kind of thing going. They're none of them are like even remotely the same, at least to me.
I find something interesting in that out of all of our picks, except for the Bossa Nova, the Joe Beam, everybody kind of picked from a similar time period, 50s through early 60s,
right.
Which I guess is, you know, our definition of jazz, or the classic jazz, quote unquote jazz period, you know, just an observation.
Sure. And kind of taking to that, like, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was kind of seeing everyone's picks is that, I realized to myself is that, I was trying to think, well, are there any modern like jazz albums that like I could, you know, consider even for my top three list? And I couldn't think of one. Like, I really couldn't think of one. The closest I could come to was Wynton Marsalis did something with his dad, and maybe in the early 90s, that was a Peanuts album. And that's like the closest thing that I could come to. Like, and maybe that just shows my ignorance to the jazz playing today. And I go out and see jazz all the time. And I like some people, I don't like some people, but none of it seems to rise to the level of I guess the greats, or the great period, if you will. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's a good point. And kind of building on what Freddie said, I think that's a really interesting way to look at this. It's like, if we were given the very wide objective mission of picking our top three jazz albums, and what is jazz even today, but right. All three of us kind of defined through a blind study of what jazz means to us, and for us it's late 50s, early 60s for the most part. Yeah. I would say for me, like, one of my honorable mentions was Fred Hirsch and Passion Flower, which I think is an amazing record. And that is modern times, we'll say, for especially compared to late 50s, early 60s. But even thinking about that, one of the reasons that Fred Hirsch is regarded as highly as he is because he was of a generation coming through in like the 80s, where he was still working with a lot of the living legends, a lot of the giants. So he kind of is a torchbearer in that way. And so even my honorable mention still pays homage to that same era that we're talking about.
Wow.
And one of the things I noticed from, past, pods that we've had is, we talk about like fusion, and I'm surprised that, there aren't really many, if any, fusion albums. Do you think that maybe the Eric Dolphy album is a fusion album at all, or
possibly a fusion of jazz and some quote unquote classical, but
not like fusion in terms of
some of his music has been classified as third stream music.
But
I mean, I guess it's all mostly improvisational, which is what a main characteristic of jazz.
Because I know the last album you talked about, the gentleman from that Return to Forever album,
Bill Connors.
So like Bill Connors, yeah, and so like that didn't make that sort of thing. And me personally, I was like, oh my gosh, I really got to put my Spanish Heart on there, from Chick Corea.
Oh, and, great album.
Also, the Return to Forever, with that vocalist that I really hate. Yeah, I guess you know her too.
Light as a feather.
yeah, I hear her vocals, but I love that album. Mm-hmm. So like we didn't pick any of that, or Intermountain Flame. Like that was like, I was like, I struggled because I had all these picks like that, and I was like, oh, I gotta put those in, but I was like, is that like,
well, you
jazz?
But our last podcast, we kind of covered a lot of that with guitar.
Right.
Yeah, but why is that? Why is that not rise to our favorite?
I don't know.
Is it just me, or the whole jazz fusion thing? It just ends up feeling like an extension of rock and roll to me more than an extension of jazz.
Good point.
Yeah, and further, I feel like as great as the greatest jazz fusion is, it doesn't quite hold up like some of the classic records we're talking about. I feel like it doesn't age quite as well.
Right. And taking a look at that from the other standpoint, one of the things that we didn't pick is any of like the Louis Armstrong stuff, or we didn't pick any Sidney Bechet albums, or any of that kind of stuff, or Kid Ory. And I was kind of curious to one of the things my partner's like favorite album is Louis Armstrong Hot Five, I believe, with West End Blues, that album. And so like none of us kind of picked any of those, and they're definitely jazz, right? How does that kind of era fit into your jazz background or picks?
Well, maybe if we were doing this podcast in the late 50s or early 60s, we would have picked some of those records.
Yeah, I agree completely. In thinking about Aaron's question, and this makes no sense, but in my mind it makes sense. For some reason, to me, Louis Armstrong, I only listen to that when I'm wanting to feel like I'm in that time period. It feels much more historical of a listening experience. And for some reason, music from the late 50s and 60s, those records that we're talking about sound more timeless to me. I don't know why.
I mean, there's a lot of factors. The technology, the sound of the actual records is a big part of it. Right,
that's true. But I mean, what about like I think so there was a Duke Ellington album pick, but maybe some of Duke Ellington's like earlier picks where the music is outstanding still. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, but for me personally, I just didn't, it just didn't factor into my thoughts on what my favorite jazz is, or what jazz is to me, I guess.
Yeah. Is it maybe perhaps that, in this, in the, like the bebop, the Charlie, say Charlie Parker to like to fusion in that little window is kind of when the artist kind of took over the sound a little bit, like those old, those big band and swing things that were just like this homogenized, like let's put this together thing. But then maybe with Bird, it started to become more of an express, you know, like a, an artist more expressing in, via the instrument more than just kind of being a part of a band. It became more of like a individual expression.
I think that's a good point. You good found, point. You found more artists and through the improvisational tool, things were much more improvised. And so therefore you got more voices.
And then I guess as artists too, from an artist standpoint, you probably don't draw as much from Louis Armstrong in your playing. I know you, Brendan, you do a lot of jazz playing, but do you ever say, oh, I got a channel on my inner Louis Armstrong here?
No, I would only try to channel my inner Charlie Parker more. That's yeah, that's my cutoff. Not that I do it, but that's what I would hope to do.
Adam had mentioned something about he who has not been mentioned yet. And maybe now it's time to mention he, because in my opinion, he is also maybe one of the only artists who approached the fusion thing and whose music in that realm is still kind of holds up. And that is Miles Davis. Nobody picked any Miles records. Anybody else care to expound?
Yeah. I will say that I was going to pick one, and I was going to pick one of the fusion records, and I'm not going to say which one, because I'm hoping that we do an episode where we do top three Miles records, because I think that would be a really cool show as well. But yeah,
absolutely.
I think he's a class of his own. I think it was kind of unfair to not only try to pick your top three favorite jazz albums, but also bring in the entirety of Miles's catalog, because I could have gone all three to him.
Right.
Well, Miles is jazz. Miles is jazz. And that's the problem. But it's funny how Coltrane kind of rose to the top with in the absence of Miles. Oh, it's not funny. It's almost pretty much assumed.
Yeah, I totally concur where, you know, we were putting together, you know, this list and our Spotify playlist, which you can check out on Spotify. You know, my personal picks were like, you know, it was, you know, Miles is factored heavily in maybe all three picks. And it was just so like, it would turn into not a focus on jazz as a whole, but more on Miles Davis and jazz as a backdrop, which is probably real life. That's probably what jazz is. That's probably why we even think about that period as such, like such a high esteem, because it was like Miles Davis and then everybody else doing stuff, or Miles Davis and then people in his band or people associated with him, or
yeah,
you know, people touching him in form or fashion, one form or fashion, or reacting to him in some form or fashion. So yeah, we will definitely come back and revisit He Who Will Not Be Named. I've been watching a lot of Harry Potter, so when you said that, Adam, I was like, yeah.
Makes sense, yeah.
And actually, another thing that I was thinking about in terms of this is that, you know, thinking about all the jazz artists out there and jazz records out there, there's some people that make great records and stuff, but man, the greats are just the greats. And, you know, when John Coltrane kind of rose to the top of our list, and like we saw him in there multiple times, I was like, yeah, I mean, He definitely is, because I was thinking about some. So some of my honorable mention picks were, you know, Jimmy Heath, and Cannonball Adderley, and some of the folks like that. And you know, I would just listen to them, and then I would just go back to that Coltrane thing. And I'm like, he's just, they're great, but they're just not Coltrane. I think that for me, that's like a big factor in, and who the best jazz folks are, who the best jazz albums are.
I mean, nobody picked Thelonious Monk.
Yeah, or Dizzy.
You know what I mean? It's vast.
That's a tough one. Yeah. Where do you guys think?
Guess, right.
Where do you guys think Coltrane would have gone had he lived longer?
I really don't know. I think he would have gone back to playing more straight ahead stuff.
Yeah.
Even like the least amount of notes. Because he played all the notes and he took it way far. And I'm sure he would have taken it further out there, but at some point in time, you know, you react into yourself. And as someone who continually tried to, explore different things, my guess is he would explore the opposite of himself.
I think he would have found the fourth dimension.
And then he would have joined the fifth dimension.
Well, I think that his sax would sound great on Age of Aquarius.
So let me just say this. It was very hard for me to narrow my picks. What are a couple of like the honorable mention folks that you just were like your third pick or whatever, you were just like, I don't know, man, like you went back and forth. What were like some of those that, and tell me a little bit about it. Let's go with you, Adam.
Well, like I mentioned briefly there for a moment, Stan Getz, and it's just like, I mean, Getz Gilberto, I mean, to, you know, tie a couple together there, or Voices, or I have like half a dozen Getz albums, and I just rotate them and love them all. Also in there would be Brubeck didn't really get mentioned there. I mean, Time Out, I love Time Further Out. Those are all great ones there. I do like Jimmy Heath. I do like, I have a couple of his that are just, great. Heath Brothers, you know, little extension of the Heaths. Those are my big. And also as a guitar player, I have to throw Wes Montgomery in there as well. Moving Wes is one of my favorites.
Yeah. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah. Well, I teased a couple of my honorable mentions, but I will say, the one Coltrane record that I think does need some love is Love Supreme. I think that's, for me, it's top up there. It's my favorite Coltrane record. To me, it's an entire meditation on vinyl, and it's amazing. And yeah,
there you go, Freddie.
Nice. I love that. That's within arm's reach. It should always be within arm's reach. That's so great. I once met a guy whose birthday is New Year's Eve. And he said, and he was an older gentleman, and he said every year he puts on A Love Supreme at like 11:20 and listens to it to ring in the new year. And he shuts off all the lights in the house, and he just meditates during the whole record. And I was like, man, that is doing it the right way.
That's great.
I love that. So that was up there for me. Also up there, Herbie, Headhunters. I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. I mean, Watermelon Man is great, and actually that album, which is sitting on my wall right there, is great. It's a great album, and you know that song is great. But man, I wanted to put it on, but I was like, these other songs are like, eh. It's like, I don't know. That's one of the things that like challenging my honorable mention picks. Like, so even My Spanish Heart by Chick Corea. I love El Bozo, Prelude to El Bozo, El Bozo 1, 2, 3. But the rest of the album, I'm like, when it gets to that fantasy thing at the end, I'm like, I'm good, man. You did it. I'm good. A lot of these other albums, it's like there's like one or two tunes where it's like, yo, yeah, this is it. And then you listen to the rest and you're like, I don't recognize this. And it's probably because you just don't listen to the rest of the album, right? Any of you guys find like, oh, this album makes my top three, but then like you listen to like the songs you don't listen to and you're like, nah, I don't know.
I hear you.
I even go for Giant Steps, right? So when I saw the Giant Steps, I thought about that and I saw, oh, Giant Steps, Naima? Yeah. Then I heard, what, Mr. PC? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I never even heard this song.
See, before. I love that song. That's a great tune.
I don't know. I guess I guess that's my ignorance.
Three for Mr. PC. Three.
I guess that's my ignorance about these jazz songs. Maybe it's because I go to compilations too much. I don't know.
Actually, and I think it's a dedication to Paul Chambers, by the way.
That's the history of that. Well, also,
you go.
I was going to say, I wonder about the overplayed factor too. Like in the case of Herbie with Chameleon, and in the case of Dave Brubeck with Take Five, I feel like those two are like the free bird of jazz. And I wonder if that has soured it for anyone.
Yeah, I definitely see that.
No, I would agree with you there because I enjoy Time Further Out more than Time Out at this point. Just.
And it's a shame. It has nothing. It's no fault of the artist. It's everyone else's fault.
Right.
Yes. However, but you got the, you know, He Who Would Not Be Named, and he has, you know, that one album, which will not be named, that I could listen to all the time. It's the best selling jazz. Or one of the best selling jazz albums of all time, and that never gets old, at least to me.
Right.
I've heard tired versions of a certain song, Freddy the F, that are a little tired for me, but not the original. No,
right,
right. Can I give my three honorable mentions?
Yeah, please, man, go ahead.
All right. Well, first of all, two of the records that two other people picked were going to be on my list. I was going to pick Charlie Parker with Strings and Africa Brass because I love both of those records. But the three that I did pick have more of a sentimental place in my upbringing, musical upbringing. Honorable mentions. Ornette Coleman, The Shape of Jazz to Come, is a very groundbreaking record. And again, the same, I just noticed all the picks that I picked or that a bunch of us picked were recorded within like 3 years of each other. Not all of them, a lot of them. Okay, another one that was actually recorded a little later is Underground by Thelonious Monk. And that's, again, only because of when I discovered that album in my life. It was a very special time. And the album cover is amazing. and then a third album that I was going to pick was John Coltrane, Johnny Hartman, which is also kind of recorded around the same time as Coltrane's Ballads. And it's just right. Beautiful, beautiful record. But those are my three honorable mentions.
Yeah, those are great ones. Those are definitely great ones. And that it's weird. I have a love hate relationship with that Johnny Hartman, John Coltrane.
Really?
I love the songs. Love Coltrane, but Johnny Hartman, as a vocalist, I'm like, oh God.
A little too schmaltzy for you?
Nah, it's not schmaltzy. It's just like the quality of his voice. It just doesn't get me.
Okay.
But I mean, I love everything about this other than that, like the quality of his voice. So that's where it's like, I like listening to it, but I'm like, oh. If only I was there.
That's great.
I have like very narrow tolerance for jazz vocalists and jazz guitarists. Those are like my two where the majority of it just does not connect with me. And then the ones that do, it's like, wow, I'm blown away. Like once I'm on board, I'm way on board. But I hear you, Aaron.
Yeah.
It's and not no coincidence that the vocalist of the Write Fiction podcast picked the vocal albums.
Which vocal? Oh, the one vocal album, right?
Yeah, one.
Yeah. Well, here's I'll give you one honorable pick that I was like, I was like, I really had a hard time. I was going to take out the Antonio Carlos Jobim Stone Flower album, and I was going to put in the album Frank Sinatra and Jobim that did.
Have that album. I love it. I found it for $4 one day, and man, and we end up in for a little context, we have in previous versions of the Write Fiction, otherwise I've covered Wave, which is with those guys, but not on that album.
Yeah. They were going to do a follow up album. And I guess it just didn't meet up to their standards. So eventually they put it out, but like that album right there, I was like, I'm going to put this up there, but I was like, I don't know, man, these guys are going to like laugh at me. So I'm going to keep it straight jazz. Yeah. And actually I have a question for you, Adam. So I'm making an assumption here that, that Freddie picked Charlie Parker with strings. Is that correct?
I did.
No.
Oh, you did.
I was going to pick it, but
in the survey that we did all four.
Oh.
Who picked those?
I think I did.
You did?
I did not pick it.
Ah, that's it. See, I knew it. I picked it.
It was one of my picks.
Adam, what's up, man?
Well, I think why I did it, because I picked Black Satan Sinner Lady instead. Because Mingus, and this gives me a great segue, Aaron. Thank you for that. Because Mingus does not get enough love. And why? And I thought to throw Mingus and Eric Dolphy into this kind of similar category where, like, I'm not going to say saying if I listen to like Coltrane or Stan Getz or any of those greats, it's like, I'm not going to say I could write or do anything like them, but I can like understand like the genesis of the ideas they come from. But when it comes to Mingus, I'm just like, where did you get this idea from? And it's just as over and over. It's like, as I call 400 level jazz, like a casual jazz listener will listen to Mingus and be like, what the hell is going on? And I've intensely studied that album recently, and I've, you know, plugged it into my nice Bose in earbuds, cranked it, and I'm just like, it's just like half an hour of just trying to figure out like where is your brain coming from, you know? And I have got plenty of love for Bird, but I it's not like a love hate as you say. I just more just. I listen to him and then I don't. And right now I'm kind of a don't pattern.
So you're like a renegade. You have a renegade liking streak of yours.
I have no consistent favorites of really anything. That's why this list is always very interesting, because it should always be like a little asterisk at the moment, because right. I don't ever want to. I mean, aside from like two or three albums that I've always like, this is my favorite, or as my record club always puts, like, oh, this album joined my already overcrowded top 25, which has like 250 albums in it. You know, it's just, it's, right. I think it's part of being this musically robust is that you can't get too married to anything.
You're right. And I think we're going to close down sometime soon, but I wanted to kind of throw out to you guys, something that I was thinking about with the picks and our conversation that we had, is that, so there in jazz, it's like around the world, and it's been around the world for a long time. What are your kind of feelings on, so I picked the One Stone Flower, which is, you know, a bossa nova kind of thing. But there's like jazz coming from Africa with the Fela Kuti. And there's, you know, jazz, you know, in this Latin jazz, there's, you know, the stuff that Dizzy Gillespie was kind of digging into. I'm sure there's other jazz out there that I have no idea, you know, the hot jazz or whatever that is in Europe or whatever. So what are your kind of thoughts on like that stuff? And like, where does that fit in with your hierarchy of stuff that you like or stuff that, you know, influences you? Freddie, what do you think, man?
Well, I mean, interesting. Yeah, there's, you know, you were saying hot jazz, like in Europe, like Django, you know, that whole thing. I just watched an interesting documentary about a Django festival that takes place in France in a town that he's associated with, place that he used to play. And I love that music. And also, you know, there's a lot of, there's Ethiopian jazz that I listen to and, you know, stuff like that. I really appreciate different subgenres, but I guess, you know, it goes back to what our picks were. When I think of quote unquote American jazz, I associate it with that golden period to me, which is, like you said, bebop, hard bop, post bop era. And I don't know if I'll ever get over that, but that's just me. That's the way.
Do you guys think of Oscar Peterson as a Canadian?
As a what?
As a Canadian? When you think about like,
oh, as a Canadian.
Every time I see Oscar Peterson, I'm like, oh, he's Canadian. So for me, he's international jazz.
Yeah, so which side of Niagara Falls have you been on, Aaron? The American side and the Canadian side?
Wait, what?
Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls and the Canadian Niagara Falls.
I think I've been on both, I think.
That's my kind of my Oscar Peterson metaphor. It's like you can be on either side of the falls. He's just Oscar to me.
Ah, nice. Anyway, go back to my question. Brandon, I know you're the jazz guy.
I'm the jazz guy.
Oh man, you're
scary.
Yeah.
Don't let us down now.
I mean, yeah, it's, I gotta echo Freddie there. Like the Mission was top three jazz albums, and I think we all went with a pretty puritanical view of jazz, and we considered it to be American, and we considered it to be late 50s, early 60s, largely, with a couple of exceptions. But so for me, when I think about international jazz, I mean, I've been on a huge, I'm going to butcher his name, Mulatu Astake kick, Ethiopian jazz. I've been on a huge kick of his lately. I'm a huge bossa nova fan and samba fan. But again, like, it's sort of like, does it have a prefix to jazz? Is it Ethiopian jazz? Is it Brazilian jazz? If it's got the prefix, for me, I had to draw the line on this list. That's where I had to cut it, because it was...
Oh, man. You're a prefix guy. Oh, dude. Oh, dude, man. You know, we're trying to break down these labels, man.
Yep.
Your prefix can't make my list.
Yes, I went super pure. The good stuff. The black tar.
All right. Finally, just want to say, and so the music that we're creating, you know, how does, you know, these jazz albums, these jazz artists that we picked or the jazz art that we love, how do you think it seeps into the music that we're making? Adam.
Well, I think, I guess from a musician standpoint, being a straight up, you know, air quote, as I do, jazz musician, requires this ridiculous amount of dedication and just technique. And I think it's tough to really be at that level. I mean, a lot of those guys that are really good at it really only do that. And I think maybe, at least in our case, at least in my personal case, I like touching upon it and getting some themes from it. But I never fully engulf myself in it, per se. But I think striving to be as articulate on their instruments as they are is kind of where I strive to be. I don't think I'll ever actually get there, but I, I, the jazz. A buddy of mine put one way when, because we, you know, with my record club, we listen to a lot of albums, and he's like, jazz and hip hop are the only two things that really consistently challenge his thinking. And I kind of see it that way. I'm always challenged when I'm trying to aspire to the jazz musicianship.
What about you, Freddie?
So the question was how we relate it to what we're doing within the band, or what we're doing these jazz personally? Picks,
these jazz picks, like, how does it influence your playing, your thinking about music in this group and just in general?
Well, like, in general, when I was around from the ages of maybe 16 through 20, 21, I didn't listen to anything but bebop and hard bop. I was a purist. That's all I listened to. That's all I played. And then one day I came to a realization that, hey man, it's not 1953 anymore, and I'm not playing on 52nd Street in New York City, and I'm never going to be as good as these guys. So I kind of opened up my palate a little bit and got back into what got me into music in the first place, which was the Motown and Beatles. So yeah, I went through a period where if didn't have sax, upright bass, acoustic piano, and a set of Gretsch drums, and it wasn't recorded, between, 1945 or 44 and 1962, I wouldn't have nothing to do with it. But so maybe some of that crept into my playing. I don't know. Maybe touch-wise, but I don't really consider myself a jazz player at all. I could fake it on some stuff, but...
But do you bring some of that jazz knowledge to our recordings at all, or you kind of think about it in terms
on certain, I guess, what is it, the market? I guess I wouldn't have been able to play that the way I played it if I didn't have some kind of background in jazz.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. What about you, B?
Yeah. Well, I think to touch a little bit on Freddie's thing, we could go way deep into essentially what became the Winton school of thought versus the Miles school of thought with what is jazz, because you could argue that everything's jazz now. Anything that's improvised is jazz now. But I also do not consider myself a jazz player. I would consider myself jazz adjacent, and I love listening to jazz. I love working with jazz musicians, and I love producing and engineering jazz. And I love incorporating it into my writing. So I think to answer your question, my most favorite thing about jazz that I incorporate into my own musicianship would be the harmonic aspect. Like, I remember the first time I heard like a major 7 chord, it gave me chills straight up. I just like, what is that? I knew nothing about anything. And I was like, what did they do? And so just incorporating what I would just call colors, jazz colors, into non-jazz context is something that I enjoy.
Yeah. And I actually feel the same way. I don't know anything about jazz. I really don't know much about music in general, but I do love me a nice chord. And on that note, I think we will call it a day. Thank you guys so much for a great discussion today. We could talk on and on about this, I'm sure. And I'm sure we will. Stay tuned for a podcast down the line about He Who Will Not Be Named. And this is The List, a Right Fiction podcast. And we will talk to you again soon. Take care. Right Fiction.